Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And here we are with our guest, Robin Jackson. She's the owner, the director, and teacher at the Civility School here in Charlottesville. You can find them on Facebook.
Absolutely. Right?
You can find them at thecivilityschool.com because we're going to talk about manners and civility.
Yes, and indeed, and social skills.
A little bit about etiquette.
And etiquette, yes.
And I think we can all learn a little bit over the next hour from Robin.
I hope so.
Yeah, well, certainly I can.
And I always learn a little something from you too, Rick.
Which is about a new way of something that the kids in your class and the other business professionals have failed at, and I'm showing you how that can be done too.
No.
Something new to take to class. I just saw something no one else has failed at, and let me bring that to class.
No, it's not. No, and you see, you're going about this all wrong. You're doing what many parents do, which is to set it up to say, oh, child, you are failing at something. Let me take you to Mrs. Jackson. It would be much better for everybody to say, I'd like you to learn some really cool, special skills. What you're going to learn from Mrs. Jackson is going to be like obtaining a magic wand or something, or having a superpower. Because you don't want, especially children, but even adults, you don't want them to think that they're having to come to me because they're in trouble or because they are faulty in some way.
I like to think of it as Mrs. Jackson is here because all the things that I have forgotten in time or that have changed over the years and the cool stories that I never heard are here to be learned.
Well, and you bring up a good point, Rick. Manners and actually rules of etiquette evolve. So not only are they different from culture to culture, but even within a culture, manners and social skills have to evolve. And that's a little bit, that's a difference between etiquette and manners. There you have it, is in the evolution of things. So sometimes rules of etiquette, and I'm making the quote marks with my fingers, rules of etiquette can stagnate. So you teach a child or you teach an adult, you know, five rules of etiquette. But as time and culture go, you know, cultures change and evolve, time goes by, those rules can actually go from being good things to do to being really not so great things to do. So manners mean that we are taking into account the manner of a culture, the manner of a time and space, as opposed to just learning a rule of etiquette.
So let's talk about that. Again, our guest today is Robin Jackson. She's the owner and director of the Civility School in Charlottesville. You can find out a little bit more at thecivilityschool.com. You've been a guest on the show before. Thank you for returning.
Thank you for inviting me.
I always have a wonderful hour when you're here learning more. I'm always feel like I need refreshing on my lessons. But have any rules changed in the last 5 to 10 years?
A lot of so-called rules. And again, I'm not sure I really like the word rules, but a lot of manners have evolved in the past 5 years.
Okay.
They also evolve. Well, all right, let me think of one that might just be, all right. There's one that's just kind of silly and kind of simple. But, and this has probably been more than 5 years, but if you think about something like, oh, how to set a table, And before I even talk about dining manners, I want to remind everybody that more people in this world eat with their fingers or eat with chopsticks than eat with silverware. I think a lot of times we, in North America, feel like, oh, we are the kings and queens of eating correctly because we know how to hold a fork.
We're the leaders.
We are the leaders in the dining etiquette. Well, no. More people in this world actually eat with their hands and eat with chopsticks, and they have equally complex dining etiquette rules and really actually probably more complex in many ways.
And fewer dishes.
And exactly. So we used to be taught to take our forks on the left side of our plate and put our napkin under them. So a teeny little subtle change in that is now we kind of think that it's nicer to put the napkin over to the left of the forks. So that's just one little step that makes dining even more comfortable, because when you sit down to put the napkin on your lap, you don't have to pick up your forks. It's to the left as opposed to underneath your forks. Now that's kind of a silly little example, but it does show you that to use etiquette in the right way, or to display manners in a way that I think is really the most important way, is to have as your goal making life comfortable and convenient for other people. So that's the slogan of the Civility School, is for the comfort and convenience of others. And it just shows you that being a well-mannered person means that you are working hard to make life better for those around you. And it can take It can be in these small, little, subtle ways.
So making life better for others. So why isn't my napkin on my right side if I'm right-handed?
Very good point. You know, I don't know the evolution of having your napkin on your left side. But I can guarantee you there is some reason that has evolved within our dining etiquette, at least dining with silverware, that has created this, keeping your napkin on the left side. Can't tell you what it is. I think I have told you the story of why your dinner knife has to go on the plate.
Oh, tell it again.
The blade. Are you sure? Because somebody may have heard this before. They might be really sick of this story.
All folks may not. I can't guarantee that all listeners now were listening before.
Well, that is true. So your dining knife has a serrated part, the blade, obviously. And when you set it down on your dinner plate, the serrated part, the blade part, should always point in toward you, not toward another dinner guest. That came about because during Middle Ages, people would have a dagger. They didn't have a nice dinner knife. They ate with a dagger. They carried a dagger around with them to do all kinds of things around wherever they lived. They would fix things with it. They'd kill animals in order to have food. And so they would sit down at the dinner table and they were eating with their hands and with this dagger. Well, things could sometimes get rough and tumble at the table, and if somebody wanted to show that they were upset with somebody, you would put the dagger down on the table with the blade pointed toward the person you were having this problem with, and that resulted in oftentimes blood and guts at the dinner table. So you can see why it became important not to accidentally threaten your fellow dinner guest. So you would put your knife down very carefully, and you would make sure that the blade was pointing in toward you. So that has carried through and is still considered a rule of etiquette today.
What's the difference between manners versus civility?
Ah, another really, really good question. Civility basically means that if you're going to be around other people, you take things from them, right? You take knowledge. You might take money. You might take, who knows what you might take. But you're taking from other people. If you're in society, it's supposed to be a give and take type of a thing. So as you take, you are expected to give back. That's the overarching idea of civility. It's give and take. Manners are ways in which we show that we honor and that we respect the idea that human society is a give and take thing. It's ways in which we indicate that we are going to live up to the rules of being in a civil society.
That sounds very difficult in today's society.
Yeah, I think in a way we've really lost track of what we should be thinking about if we want to live together in a society. Societies don't do very well if it's all about one individual person. So in other words, if I go out and I live my life only thinking about myself, whether I need to rush ahead of everybody and get that parking place, even though other people have been in line for that parking place, or I need to shove a fellow shopper out of the way so that I can get to the peanut butter, even though that fellow shopper was looking at the peanut butter, well, that's not going to lead to really good feelings amongst other society members, people in society. So I think in a way we've become this kind of narcissistic place where many of us are really just thinking about getting what we need done. And it's not very civil, and it's not showing great manners.
Have we lost manners? Do we
no.
have lesser manners? Am I just the old man grumbling?
You're being curmudgeon. That's what you're being, Rick, is a curmudgeon, which I tend to do too every now and then. But no, we have not lost them. We are choosing right now not to pay much attention to it. I think actually we feel very obligated to be first. I mean, I think it's more that the push to be first and to get what you feel that you need has kind of, and in this right now, it's kind of outweighing that idea that we have to all somehow get along here. And I think we will definitely go back to that. I can't remember who, but a friend of mine said that, you know, really history is a spiral. So we spiral in different ways. So it's not like all evolution and devolution. We're spiraling, and I think we will spiral back to feeling like, you know, let's be kind to each other and think about others, not always just ourselves.
I want to make sure to talk about the civility school.
Yes.
And what you teach there. I want to leave out foods for a little bit because I want to make sure they get their own section. So without discussing foods,
okay,
what are some of the first things that you teach at the civility school?
First off, I want to make sure that students understand why they're there. And by students, you know, I teach a wide range of people. I teach three-year-olds. You know, I have a class every summer for 3 to 5 year olds. And I teach adults. I go into organizations. We talk about customer service. We talk about how to get along within an organization as well as how to treat clients and customers outside of the organization. I do a lot of work with college students, young adults. I work with students who are interviewing at schools, boarding schools, colleges, academic and athletic recruitment. Because all of this takes good interpersonal skills. But what I always want to make clear is that this is not, you know, when you come into the civility score, when I come out to you, it's not about being fancy. You know, a lot of times people think anything to do with etiquette means that, you know, that you're trying to get somebody to be fancy, quote unquote. And in fact, if somebody does make you feel that you are not fancy enough, that you are not kind of affected looking enough, they're really showing and really poor manners, poor social skills. So that's really the first thing I always want students to know. That I'm not there to make them, you know, only feel comfortable when they're wearing white gloves and tuxedos. In fact, you know, I want them to be able to fit into any environment.
But how do you start with get that lesson across to a 3 to 5 year old?
Oh, well, they are very receptive. And, you know, you'd make everything kind of, obviously, a game with them. And one of the things that we do is I try to personify, have them personify a stuffed animal or a favorite toy. And we treat that toy or that stuffed animal with great respect. So with the very young ones, we're always doing something. So we'll have a teddy bear tea time where we plan a party for our inanimate friends. But now, even though, you know, the assorted mermaid dolls and American Girl dolls and Batman figures and things like that who come in really truly aren't alive, we give them a life. So we take into account where Batman might want to sit or where, you know, whether or not we gave the appropriate information in our invitation to our inanimate friends. So you just take it down to the level of the student with whom you're working. You know, and surprisingly, I find that middle schoolers are probably the best to work with. I love working with middle schoolers. You know, one day they kind of sound and act like they're 8-year-olds, and the next day some of them sound like they're about 25. And you can catch them in their vulnerable moments. You can catch them when maybe they themselves have not been treated all that well. And so they soak it in. I think they appreciate it and get more out of it than one might realize.
You were saying that the the phrase is for the comfort and convenience of others.
Yes.
Where does that phrase come from? Is that a phrase out of a book, some piece of literature that you've copied? Is that something that you made for yourself? Is that
Post
no. piece?
No, I think that just came out of my own mind when I was thinking about what my goal was going to be, or what I thought that the goal of possessing and showing good manners should be. Because if you think about it, who really wants to be around somebody who is not making life comfortable or convenient for them, for someone? If you look at the case of somebody who is always late, somebody who just is always keeping friends and you know, coworkers, supervisors waiting, that person is clearly not making life comfortable or convenient. You know, you can take a lot of the things that sometimes we tend to do as humans, and, you know, if you ask that question of it, you can kind of clearly see what makes for a good social skill and what makes for not such a great social skill.
Again, our guest today is Robin Jackson. She's the owner and director at the Civility School here in Charlottesville. You can find the school on Facebook. You can go to the website. It's thecivilityschool.com as we talk about manners and civility and etiquette today. We've spoken a little bit. You teach all ages, and you go out to various businesses. Folks are listening about sending their kids off to pick up Robin's magic, as we spoke about earlier. What's the cost of a class?
Well, costs really vary. I teach such a variety of things in such a variety of ways that really costs vary. So I can't give you a definitive cost.
Well,
sorry.
No. All right. Is that on the Is that on the website?
Yes. If I do list a workshop or a class, it is on the website. I also offer, I can tell you that private tutoring where I'll meet with a student one-on-one is $75 an hour.
Let's take our first break. We'll come back and we'll talk about, I've got a whole bunch of things here, questions on job interviews and babysitting etiquette and how to deal with an ex-spouse and thank you notes and all kinds of cool stuff.
Looking forward to it.
I'm just going to throw all kinds of stuff at Robin and see how civil I am with that. Hang tight. All right, back in action here with Robin Jackson today, talking about the civility school and what happens inside those walls. So you said that middle schoolers are some of the more entertaining?
Well, they're oddly receptive. You know, people give middle schoolers a bad rap, and I've always enjoyed middle schoolers. I've been a middle school counselor as well as a high school counselor. I have to say I really enjoy middle schoolers. I also just think they are at a unique age where they see that social skills and how people treat each other, I think they get it. Because they're in the trenches. They're at the point where people are starting, some children are starting to grow and starting to learn empathy, and some are still back there really only thinking about themselves. So children at that age are really in the throes of things, and they tend to be very receptive, I've found.
Is there something that you teach the middle schoolers that okay, now that you're at this group age, I can start with this class?
Yes. So middle schoolers, you know, I don't tend to teach a lot. I don't go in depth with empathetic intention. Empathetic intention is a big part of the way I teach. I don't want students simply following rules of etiquette so that they can follow a rule of etiquette. I want it to be more of I wanted to have some empathetic intention behind it, because there are times where following a rule of etiquette and being exacting and right about a rule of etiquette can be the worst thing one can do. There are times that you really do need to change things up and act in a different way. You know, it's much better to be nice rather than right, be kind rather than right. So if you're making somebody uncomfortable with your very strict rules of etiquette, then you're not doing the right thing. You know, one of the examples I give with college students or young professionals, if you go out to a restaurant with your supervisor or you go out to an interview with someone who is thinking about hiring you, and you go, let's say you go to, you know, a fairly nice restaurant, but they serve hamburgers. And you have gone to your etiquette class and you have learned that a regular size hamburger should be cut in half. And then you eat it with your fingers, but still cut in half. It's a regular size hamburger. And you sit down at this fairly nice hamburger restaurant. Your supervisor or perhaps future boss picks up his or her hamburger and eats it without cutting it. You're going to need to nix that rule about cutting your hamburger in half, because you're just going to look a little bit obsequious, and maybe you're not going to make quite the connection with that person that you might have otherwise. And you might embarrass that person. So learning that it's better to be kind than right, unless we're talking about, of course, moral values, is important.
Again, Robin Jackson talking about manners. Tell me about being a good listener.
You know, again, talking about life right now and kind of how I think as a society we've gotten a little bit narcissistic in our ways of dealing with one another. Listening is so difficult unless you really practice it. So I try to really teach children and adults that it is incumbent upon them to make the person who is talking with them feel like the most interesting person they have talked with in ages. And that takes being a good listener. It means turning off, trying to turn off everything else that's running through your head and actually taking in what somebody else is saying to you. And you need to make the person know that you are being a good listener. You know, I don't want to throw my husband under the bus, but back in the old days when newspapers were a big deal in the morning, we'd sit down and I would try to tell a story. My husband would have the newspaper up and I would say, well, please put the newspaper down. I am talking to you. And he would say, well, I can still hear you. Well, that's good because he probably was, he could hear me, but he needed to make me know that he was listening.
I'm sure my wife would tell a similar story.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm sure I've certainly done that to him too, probably. But, you know, so it's not just about active listening, which we've all learned about. It's about really making the other person know and feel that you are listening to them.
You know, that carries over to today's habits of cell phones at the dinner table and earbuds, et cetera. What are some rules? I use the word rules again, but
it's okay. Tools
mm-hmm. Of etiquette for these pieces of technology in today's in 2019.
You know, it's really interesting, Rick, when you think about it, because these technological things that we have now really are wonderful tools, and they are in our lives whether we like it or not. So learning to use them as tools is important, knowing that there are a lot of good ways in which to use. Let's just use your cell phone. It can be used as a clock. It can be used as so many different things, a camera, a phone, all of these other things. And knowing when the time is right for that use of that tool. But you wouldn't bring a tool like that, if you think of it as a tool, you wouldn't bring that with you to the dinner table, right? You wouldn't, in 20 years ago, if you needed to use, you wouldn't take your alarm clock to the table. You wouldn't take your, hopefully, you wouldn't take your camera to the table. So knowing that unless you need it as a tool at that moment at the dinner table, don't do it. Now, there are times where you might be out to lunch with a friend and you are waiting for a phone call from your doctor or from your child's school. And then simply communicate. Say, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to look at my phone occasionally. Communicate how you're going to be using that item. Don't just take it for granted. Oh, we all have cell phones and I'm just going to, and it's a tool that I use for many things, but I'm just going to keep this out all the time. So I think coming up with ways in which you use it in different environments, but realizing that it is a tool, it is not a part of you.
Again, the Civility School here with us today, Robin Jackson. She's the owner and director. You can find them on Facebook, and you can go to the website, thecivilityschool.com. You know, I have a friend who's, well, we were talking about you being a guest on the show, and his friend was telling me about her son, very thoughtful of others, very helpful around the community. But walks into the house and seems to forget all of those things. Not quiet when coming and going, the door gets slammed, yes. Leaves food out on the counter, after making something to eat, dirty dishes, things in the laundry room, et cetera. And so her question was, how do you take the wonderful habits from outside the house and bring them inside of the house?
You know, that's such a great question. And as the mom of three boys, I can really relate to that question. One of the things that I feel like is very important, and I usually teach it in classes with children who are about 8 to 12, anywhere in that realm, we do something called How to Be a Civil Family Member, and it's a whole unit, and we discuss things like that, keeping your feet quiet when you're going through the house, not involving yourself in conversations that don't have anything to do with you. Asking before you go into a room and turn the TV channel, you know, if somebody is watching TV, being careful and mindful of your voice and all of that. And we actually turn it into a competition where students see how many, I give them a checklist of things that we're looking for. And we see how many students for 3 days straight can complete these deals. So the parents complete the checklist, and then, you know, I usually have prizes. Sometimes we have siblings in classes, so we do. It's fun for parents to. It's fun for the parents, probably not for the students, to create these competitions in homes. But I really do make it a point of teaching students that, you know, the home is a practice ground for how you're going to behave outside of the home, and also the home is the place where you want to be comfortable, and it should be a refuge. You want it, the student would want that for himself or herself, while other family members want that too. So making life convenient, comfortable and convenient for people outside the home is great, but my goodness, the home should be the biggest refuge that anybody could have. So I do teach that. Now, retroactively, I'm not sure how one goes about that, except maybe, you know, saying, I so admire all that you do outside of the home, but you have to realize that we need this to be a refuge as well. It's a tough one. I think there are a lot of angels abroad when it comes to children.
Yeah. Again, our guest, Robin Jackson, as we talk about manners and civility, let's talk about some of the, I don't know if regional is the right word or not, but I think you and I were both more raised in a more southern fashion.
Yes.
So it's sir or ma'am a lot of times. And now, as especially in Charlottesville, where we have many folks who come from outside of the South, as with the university, and I've heard it a lot, who just look at you like, what?
Right. Well, this is a prime example of knowing your culture, knowing where you are. So a lot of people, especially people who are born in the South, their parents expected sir or ma'am as a modifier after any answer. And I have worked with students, all kinds of students whose parents and grandparents and teachers have different ideas about sir and ma'am. You know, in parts of the country, hearing sir and ma'am is just like nails on a chalkboard. They feel like it's too obsequious. They really just don't care to hear that. I also hear of employers and college professors who say they don't want to hear it. They think it sounds a little infantile from a young adult to hear sir or ma'am. So knowing where you are and what is expected of you is important. Now, I want to say something about gentle modifiers. That's what I call anything after a yes or a no. So especially when I'm teaching younger students, I say, if your parents are expecting sir and ma'am, then of course say yes, sir, no, ma'am, yes sir. But always have some kind of modifier after that. Yes, thank you. No, thank you. Yes, please. Yes, mom. Yes, Rick. Yes, Mrs. Jackson. So always have something after that. Now, when it becomes tough is when parents or grandparents insist upon it, and other people the child is forced to be around do not want to hear it. I once worked with a young girl who was being reared by her grandmother, and she was absolutely taught to use sir and ma'am, and she used it all the time. And her teacher absolutely did not want to hear ma'am and let the child know that. The child continued, and it became actually, it got to the point where the child was sent to the principal's office by the teacher. So that's a tough one. That's one where I think when you're working with a child, that people need to understand what a child is being taught and to go along with that. But yes. So, for example, if you're going to go take a job in, you know, in a northern state, and you are, you know, over 18, might be a good idea to think of other gentle modifiers, other things other than sir and ma'am. You know, what works here in Charlottesville, Virginia, is not going to work where most of the students I work with and young adults are going to end up. They're going to end up either physically working in another country or virtually working with people from all over the place. They need to understand different rules of culture and be able to kind of slide amongst those different rules and to feel comfortable in different places. And that's that global cultural awareness is another really important focus of the civility school.
How about introducing yourself?
Yes. And knowing how to introduce oneself is a big deal. So are you talking about here in America, how we introduce
oneself? Well, let's start there.
Yeah, so knowing how to approach somebody and actually introduce yourself and feel confident about that, and for other people to know that if you're sitting and somebody comes up to you to meet you or to greet you, that you need to stand up. Little old-fashioned kind of a rule, but we still see it here in the South, is that if someone approaches you and you stand up from your seat to greet them, it is up to the person who approached you to say, oh, please have a seat, and that you are supposed to stand until the person says, please have a seat, until it becomes awkward, and then you have a seat. And greeting, things like eye contact are clearly different from country to country. I worked with the UVA women's basketball team for a bit, and this was years ago, and there was a player from Africa who said one of the most difficult parts about moving to the U.S. was learning to actually make eye contact upon meeting people. That was actually frowned upon in her particular country. So greetings can be fraught with all kinds of social skill things that change from place to place.
And as an American from the South, unless I'm traveling abroad, how do I know or learn these things just from running into someone that you may be bringing in to introduce me to someone? How am I supposed to know what's appropriate?
Well, I think in the U.S., we're pretty lucky in that usually what works in one part of the country as far as making introductions works in another part of the country. We're okay with that. I think it comes down to other things, you know, gift-giving, business transactions, dining. Those are the things that can really, really cause people problems when they're traveling, especially for business abroad. And there's a great book. I don't usually make pitches for books, but there's one called Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands. And I'm sorry, I don't have the book in front of me. I can't remember the authors. But if people who travel a lot for business get this book, I think they would be very happy. Gives you little snippets of what works and what doesn't work.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back and keep talking with Robin Jackson from the Civility School on manners and etiquette, etc. Be right back. Back with my friend Robin Jackson talking about things that I've got done nothing wrong in the last years of life in etiquette and civility. My mother, grandparents taught me well. So did you, Dad. My dad did a great job too. And why they did him out.
I know. It's not just women who teach these things.
That's right. My father led me down the right path.
He did an excellent job, too.
Except in food, because I managed to spill food on my... I regularly have to get new shirts.
That's okay. That's all right.
But a lot of that's the food's fault.
Of course it
not is. Not mine.
I know. Some food should come with warnings.
And that's because at the civility school, you spent a lot of time on dining etiquette. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. And you know, it's funny because that seems to be where, when people think about social skills and etiquette, they think about dining etiquette. It's funny because when I started the business, that was probably the last thing on my mind was how someone should eat.
We already talked about cutting a hamburger in half.
Yes.
I would think, how to eat soup without spilling it on myself. But I
scoop away, Rick. Scoop away from yourself, not toward yourself.
But, you know, it's lay out the... How to lay out the silverware.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily how to eat with it.
Well, it's absolutely about how to eat with it. But, again, I don't like people to get too bogged down with the silverware. That's why I always bring up these other countries where you need to learn to eat with your fingers or with chopsticks. Because I don't want people to think, dining with silverware,
I'm fine with sushi and tapas. I have no problem with that.
Well, then you should come to one of my summer camps where we pretend we're in Morocco for a class. And we eat out of a tangine and we eat with our fingers, and we learn the proper rules of eating with our fingers. You could enjoy it.
If you need someone to be up on stage to show so you can point and say, not like that, I'm your guy.
Well, I'll remember that. I'll remember that, Rick, because 9 to 12-year-olds have a good sense of humor, and I think they would really enjoy that. I think they would enjoy it.
All right, so let's talk about the food class.
Yes.
So what are some of the foods that you focus on?
Well, we, of course, focus on French fries.
Why?
Because I like to see the look on students' faces when I tell them that there are times that they need to eat their French fries with a fork. I like to see their looks on their faces, and I enjoy that. So we talk about French fries.
Why do you eat French fries with a fork?
Well, my cutoff is cloth napkins. If you were eating at a restaurant and there are cloth napkins, then it is probably time to pick up your knife and fork, cut your French fry, one French fry at a time, Rick, and dip it in the ketchup and eat it with your fork. You dip it in the ketchup. You do not slather the French fries with ketchup.
I'm writing that down.
Do not slather ketchup on your French fries.
I'll text that to myself.
Yes.
With a reminder.
Unless you're by yourself. If you're by yourself.
Yeah, I don't go to many cloth napkin places by myself. But okay, as a reminder.
Well, if you're home by yourself, that's fine. And you can get out a cloth napkin.
I do have some cloth napkins at home for by myself. My wife broke those out recently.
Good.
Okay, so French fries.
Yes. The dinner roll is a very important item in the area of dining etiquette. You do not, and I want to repeat this, you do not take your dinner roll and make it a butter sandwich and then pick it up and eat it like it is a butter sandwich. You tear it in half.
You are ruining my meal.
It's my goal. You tear it in half from the top, not like a hamburger, and you keep it on your bread and butter plate. You tear off little bits of it, butter them down on the bread and butter plate, and then take it to your mouth. The other thing you don't do with a dinner roll is take the middle out, roll it around like a ball, and then pop that in your mouth. Being the mother of three boys, I will admit to seeing that once or twice.
All right. Not taking Robin out to dinner.
Yeah, and I can be a real killjoy.
Can be. all right. So French fries and dinner rolls.
Yes.
Have been put in my difficult food category.
Yes. And, you know, the art of the dinner napkin. There's one whole, you know, I can talk for a long time about where your dinner napkin goes, what you do with it if you have to excuse yourself from the table, where it goes, you know, at the end of a meal.
Well, I'd like to know. I mean, don't.
Okay. You don't want me to withhold these vital.
I mean, we can keep it in a reasonable length of time, but.
All right. So, Rick, do you know if you excuse yourself from the table and everyone else is still eating, where do you put your dinner napkin?
In my seat.
Very good. That was really good. Yes. Goes in your seat.
I somewhat fold it up.
Oh, don't do that.
No.
You don't want to pay too much attention to
it. Well, I don't like fold it in a.
Okay.
I just kind of casually fold it. I just don't
gather it.
I don't leave it in a big plop.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's okay, too. Plopping it is okay. All right. And then when you return, you may be surprised to find it on the back of your chair because servers have been taught to. Again, we're going to go back to making life comfortable and convenient for other people. They've been taught to put it there because it's just that much easier to put on your lap when you return.
My wife didn't pick it up and do that for me.
She's not your server, Rick.
Well, I was taking the server out of the equation.
Oh, good, good. Your wife will be very happy to hear that.
No. I wasn't making them the same.
Yes, and that's just one little thing. You never dip your napkin in your water to clean your face, I hope, Rick. No, I can tell by the look on your face that you never do that.
For this comment, I'll say no.
Yes, that is exactly right. You never refold your napkin at the end of a meal.
No.
Mm-mm. Because your host or the server may think that you never used your napkin and it would go back into the clean pile. And that is not a gift.
That's that pretty obvious.
No subsequent diners really want to find that.
The concept of me never using my napkin is pretty obvious.
So napkin etiquette is something. Dining, you know, how you sit at a dining table. You don't slouch. You don't cross your legs at the knees. You sit a certain distance. You should sit about a hand's width from the edge of the table so that
you're
not.
Is that based on my stomach or my chin?
That is based upon your torso. You take your hand, and it's a hand's width, not a length, from the edge of the table to your torso. That's how far you should sit from the dining table.
Okay.
There are lots of other rules.
That's the problem.
And here I am calling them rules when I said earlier in the show that I don't care for the word rules. And all right. And again, all of that just flies out the window when you go to a country, you know, where you might go to a country where our weird crisscross way of holding our knife and fork do not apply. Or when you go to a country where, you know, again, they're eating with their hands, or you go to a country where how you eat with chopsticks is really important. You're going to be judged on that.
Is it more difficult because I'm right-handed?
Yes.
Is it that much more difficult to be left-handed in America and follow some of these rules eating in that same space and you're like constantly bumping up?
And that's where a host... if you're hosting something, you should always try to figure out whether anybody in your party is a left-handed person so that you can give them a good seat so that they don't feel like they're banging into their dining mate. It's important. Also, you always shake with your right hand, not with your left hand, even if you're left-handed. You know, you think that people understand that just intuitively, but I was just teaching a workshop with young adults last week, and I had a student say that she had been shaking with her left hand for all these years, which definitely is an awkward thing.
Any other important food or food safety or special food issues? Like the dining roll thing throws me off.
Yes, the dining roll that one could take a whole class. You know, one of the interesting things is when you're working with adults, not children, but adults with food allergies. is how they can relay that to their host or to the chef without making other people uncomfortable and without dwelling upon it too much. I've been, you know, I've seen adults who go into graphic details of what would happen if they ate this. And really, if there's a way, you know, you can get chef cards that you present to the chef when you go into a restaurant, or you can let your host know ahead of time. And you know, I have a son with a severe nut allergy who, you know, he keeps his EpiPen. Now, I don't teach that kind of subtlety with children with food allergies. I think they should be screaming it, you know, as loudly as they can. But with adults, you know, with food preferences or food allergies, it's always, if you can be a little more subtle about it, I think it's nice.
Let's talk about thank you notes.
Oh, please do. Yes. Yes. So bringing back, you know, written, handwritten communication is kind of like my pet project when I'm working with students, particularly young adults, who really see no need in writing thank you notes for anything. And if you think about it, writing a handwritten thank you note, particularly for an interview or for a special experience, really can do nothing but make that other person remember you in a really fond manner. There is nothing other than taking up a couple minutes of your time that could be wrong with that. You know, I've had a lot of young adults say, oh, that just is over the top. It'll make me look silly. No. No, it won't. It's another way of letting people know that you care enough to sit down and do something personal. And if in that thank you note, especially if you're writing for to thank someone for an interview, you bring up something about something that was said in the interview, some kind of connection that you and the interviewer make, believe me, that does nothing but make that interviewer remember you. I have a friend whose adult son wrote a thank you note. And the person who hired him, this was for a big league job, career, said that he got the job because he wrote a handwritten thank you note. You know, we need to go back to some of these personal ways of communicating with one another. An email is great. You know, writing an email directly after someone has done something nice for you is good. But in addition to that, send them a thank you note.
I had listened, because you've been on the show before, I'm not hiding that, Robin Jackson from the Civility School in Charlottesville, and in one of the older shows, someone had asked a question about going to a party of some sort and receiving one of those gift bags for coming, and inside of that gift bag was a thank you note or a thank you card ready for you to fill out in return.
I've forgotten that, Rick.
And I'd like your feedback on that.
Okay. No. You don't give somebody a thank you note card to write to you. That kind of defeats the purpose of genuine appreciation. So I say no to that. Don't put a thank you note to yourself in a party favor bag. Was this a child's birthday party?
I think so.
You know, and maybe they thought they were doing something, they were teaching the other children a nice rule or a nice tool of etiquette. But I think I would avoid doing that. Again, that takes away what I think is really important, which is empathetic intention. And even with young children, although they may not be 100% capable of really feeling empathy till they're about 10, sometimes even a little bit older, it's important to start having them practice that and teaching them about empathy. And if you just make it too easy for them, then they don't learn that.
Just a few minutes left, again, with our guest, Robin Jackson. You can find out more at thecivilityschool.com or go to the Facebook page of the Civility School here in Charlottesville. We talked about modern manners. We mentioned that several times. But in the modern world of LGBTQ, how do you bring that up when you go to visit a business?
Great question. You know, this, the gender It's interesting because gender, and this is more than, I'm going to start this whole thing. We're not going to have that much time to talk about it. But ladies first was always a way that many etiquette mores got started, chivalry, all of that. I've really learned to kind of reteach that in a way. Introductions, learning people's pronouns as part of introductions is important. One area I'm also keenly aware of this eventually, I'm surprised it hasn't already, kind of making a difference is cotillion.
It's been on for a week now. You've had that?
Yes. It's going great. We have a full house. The Jefferson Cotillion is another thing that I run under the Civility School. Great dance instructors. We've really learned that instead of saying, girls and boys, we have leads and follows. We try to take gender out of the cotillion and keep it at leads and follows. And I really am surprised. We haven't yet really seen a lot of effect there yet, but we're ready for that.
Robin Jackson. So just a very short time left here before we finish up. I'll squeeze this in. Political civility. We could do a whole hour on that.
Yes.
So squeeze it in 30 seconds.
Well, I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Being right should not be the goal. Being kind should be the goal. It's very hard, when you feel passionate about something, and politics have always been this way. Maybe now more so than ever. But be kind over being right. I think now in this day and age, we feel obliged to fight to make our point. And that goes at the expense of other people and relationships.
So, Democratic debate.
Yes.
A short time ago, one of the candidates was accused of calling out Joe Biden and being rude to him. And
yes.
Some others said, no, he's just trying to win.
I think it's both. I think he was being rude. And I think it was a couple candidates, actually. I think he and they were being rude, and they were also trying to be right. Again, it's an obligation. I must be right, and I must put myself into fight mode. We need to change that.
Robin Jackson, she's the owner. She's a director at the Civility School. You can go to thecivilityschool.com or on the Facebook page for the school. Robin, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much, Rick. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. You as well. Take care, everyone.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC-LP, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Engineering assistance was by Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at cvillepodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.